Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I am so happy to have my good friend on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you, Shireen. And on the political right, another good friend, Dan McKay.
Hello. It's nice to be with you. is that a very good Shireen impersonation?
Dan, I remember when we used to have Jim DeBacchus on the show, and I would say, my good friend Dan McKay, and then I would say, and Senator Jim DeBacchus, and Jim would always laugh and give me a hard time about it.
I feel like I got elevated to friend status last week, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, it's good to have friends at a time of a pandemic, and coronavirus continues to be at the top of the news. Let's just talk about what we're seeing. The U.S. death toll, we think, is going to surpass 70,000 today. And most people believe that's an undercount. Tough news still, even as states are reactivating their economies and we are relaxing COVID restrictions in this country. Dan, do you think we're on the right track, just nationally speaking?
I think so. And I think, you know, the local influence on making these decisions is huge. I think you see, and this is, you know, as I'm reading the data charts and other analysis that are coming in, you see kind of a bouncing along that's going to follow. And we're seeing that here in Utah where, you know, some days we're up a couple, some days we're just a little down from that. And it's just going to be this kind of plodding along thing. I think what everybody needs to realize is one of our key goals is managing medical resources. That's how we're going to keep people alive that get the virus. And, you know, managing medical resources, that number can go up. It can go even more up as we look at capacity here in the state of Utah. But we've largely prevented the massive swell at hospitals that we've seen in other places in the country, in New York, or we've seen in China or other places where the medical system is completely overrun. And now this ability to kind of get out, still social distance, but at the same time, you know, kind of bring society back to life a little bit, get more people back to work, but at the same time, still be careful. I think it'll be interesting to see, can we as a society responsibly balance the consciousness of both to still be aware.
Yeah, we have a City Creek Center opening in our state this week. That's a big deal in Salt Lake City because it's our flagship shopping center. Shireen, are you happy with the way you think people are responding to this reactivation?
No, and I'll be really clear. I think this is a time more than ever that direct and plain speak is really important. The real risk level to individuals in Utah didn't really change that much between the last day in April and the first day in May. But the signaling that came from our leaders in the state suggested to the people of the state that it had. And so if you look at pictures from many state parks in southern Utah, if you look at even just around your own neighborhood, I guarantee you, you're going to see people taking this less seriously. The reason that we've done so well is because people really did take it seriously in the beginning and used that opportunity to slow the spread of the virus in our community. Now, basically, what we're saying is we have capacity in our hospital. Because we have room in our ICUs does not mean that we need to use it. And so I think people really need to take seriously the recommendations that are still out there. But I don't know that we've been as plain in communicating to the public as we need to be to say, just because we have moved in this direction, because we're starting to work with businesses to try to create plans to reopen safely, doesn't mean that it's time for you to let down your guard.
I'll just say from the political middle, the next thing I believe Utahns will see is version 3 of the Utah Leads Together plan. Some of you will know I work on that a bit. But the interest is in putting out more specific, to your point, Shireen, guidance on high-risk individuals. And the data is quite clear that if you are 65 and older, if you have high blood pressure, if you have obesity, diabetes, kidney disease, you are so much more likely to be impacted negatively by this virus. And so if we can keep our hospital utilization rates down, if we can follow social distancing and face coverings, and if we can protect high-risk, I think we can get this economy doing a lot better than it's been doing. Any either of you want to take issue with that, or you think we're on the right track?
I just want to say that I think that we have, I understand that there's a great need and desire to get our economy moving. I think when we do that, people taking very seriously their role in as you mentioned, wearing the face coverings, reducing trips in public if you can. If you can, I think we all want to go to restaurants, but if you, you know, can order in, tip your server anyway, all of those kinds of steps will help to continue to keep us in a place where more people are safe and we do not lose more lives than we need to.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, I want to just ask you, putting a little bit more of a local touch on the coronavirus issue, we're up to 56 deaths in our state. We've had about 5,500 cases. Governor Herbert has signed a bill that shields businesses, property owners from coronavirus-related lawsuits, and basically allows companies to operate without fear of legal action if someone's exposed on their property. Did you support that legislation? Can you provide our listeners with additional insights?
It did. You know, I did support the bill, and I still think it's a very important piece of legislation. Remember, though, the bill did not say if an employer or a business acts willfully and wantonly against recommendations from, you know, from the CDC or from their local health department, it does not exempt that behavior. What it says is if you're in just the ordinary business mode and you are out there, you know, serving customers or doing whatever, and someone gets the virus as a result of being, you know, they can use contact tracing and they figure it out that it's back to you, it just avoids that liability, right, for that component. But if somebody is extremely negligent or purposeful about it, you know, like, for example, you know, for those of you that follow Twitter, we had McKay Coppins, you know, as a favorite Twitter account of mine. And he listed on there that there were two businesses that instructed staff to ignore quarantine guidelines. And it resulted in 70 cases of the COVID virus. Now, that's a situation that's totally different. Now you have an employer that is purposefully telling employees and forcing them into an unsafe situation, and the law can't protect that type of behavior. So in that way, that bill was a very important step to help society and to help businesses feel like they can open, because that was the question from all these business owners is, yeah, I guess we could open. What do we do about potential liability? And I think that bill is going to go a long way to at least solve the, you know, the accidental or the community spread type of elements.
Shireen, did you take any issue with it, or you think we're on the right track as a state there?
So I foolishly
That's why
asked.
We have the left and the right. Yeah, that's what our listeners hear the other side.
We got a little briefing. So at the county council, we have a legislative update. And when we got first word of this, I asked, you know, talking about protections for workers.
Hey, I want to come to that meeting, by the way, sometime. That sounds like a great meeting.
We have a great time. I asked what the protections were for workers, and was clearly and quickly educated that it was not about worker protections. And I just was like, oh yeah, okay, sounds on brand. So I think that the issue for me is that I'm worried that it sends a larger message that could backfire, to suggest to the public that businesses aren't going to be held liable. Though I understand the finer details of it, and what you've explained, Dan, is really important, but I think it sends a message that says it's not really the business's responsibility if their employees are sick, or that if you come in as a customer that you are. So I'm worried. I think that's a really, it's sending a mixed message, and it also is putting at risk our workers and our community. So I understand it. I also believe that it is, I would have preferred to have seen something that prioritized essential workers or workers that are going to be out in our spaces.
From the political middle, I'll just say this is something for our listeners to keep an eye on. Let's see how this plays out. Hey, we've got about two more minutes left in this segment, and I don't want to leave it while we're on the coronavirus issue by just talking about the $800,000 for the hydroxychloroquine drug, the whole issue of the governor's office purchasing these drugs and then getting, you know, a refund for them, but it raised a lot of red flags. In the end, the governor's office did an internal review. had determined that all parties acted in good faith and it's no longer prudent to buy the drugs. But it seems to me like this story is going to be alive for a little bit longer. Shireen?
Yeah, you know, I really appreciated the very strong and clear voice of Representative Suzanne Harrison in particular on this issue. When we are not following the science, when we're not following good practice or data, it starts to create, I think, fissures in our trust with our local government. And I'll say, for the most part, I do think we've done a good job. And I think our leaders really do have our best interests at heart, unlike our president, who continues to make this crisis worse. And many of us believe that he's really not following the science. But she came out really clearly and said, you know, somebody who's fiscally conservative, really concerned about how your tax dollars are spent, this was not appropriate. And even just the cost per pill, the cost per dose was way out of line with what would be normally considered appropriate. So I'm really glad that this got a good look. But I'm concerned about the larger implications around this. And I'm glad that we're going to see an audit.
Yeah. Dan, 30 seconds. What's the take on Capitol Hill about what we're seeing with these large emergency purchases that sometimes raise red flags?
In the fog of war, decisions are going to be made. And you want to know my biggest problem with the way things... I don't have a problem with the hydroxychloroquine expenditure because it's tough for someone to armchair quarterback what an executive decision was made. My problem is you have no executive presence. All the executives and everybody is saying, I didn't know anything about this. And I'm going to call this right now. In a few months, there's going to be some public hanging of a poor government official. And it's going to be, you know, news for that person. And they're going to string them up over this issue when really it came down to some executive decisions that were made in the governor's office. And no one is going to own them. That's my take.
Interesting. We'll conclude this segment, but I'll just say from the political middle that as I worked on Utah Leads Together, there was a little bit of mention of hydroxychloroquine in that document, and everything I saw was very above board. I had Dr. Miner from the health department calling me and basically making sure that we, qualified statements about the drug. So I think our good leaders have done a great job, and I am grateful for the audit. I think it's needed, but I think we'll find that our state leaders have done a really nice job. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, Natalie Gochner, with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We've been talking about the coronavirus, but we want to move on to some other news. And where else should we go? But we're in a presidential election year. We have Joe Biden as the presumptive nominee in the Democratic Party and Donald Trump, obviously, on the Republican side. I'm going to go to you, Shireen, first, because we have these allegations by Tara Reid related to Joe Biden. There's been a lot of news about it lately. Interestingly, there's been news coming out of MWEG, which is Mormon Women for Ethical Government. This is a nonpartisan group that really dedicates itself to ideals of, I don't know, ethical government, decency, honor, accountability, justice. I'd love you, Shireen, to just give us a take from the left on the MWEG contributions and thoughts about the Tara Reid allegations.
Yeah, so they published some commentary in the Salt Lake Tribune under the title, Women Should Not Be Held to Answer for the Behavior of Men. It's a powerful piece, and I would recommend anyone read it. A few lines stood out to me and really resonated with me. One being, if you cannot learn and demonstrate respect for the emotional and physical autonomy of women, step out of public life. I was like, hello. I'm listening. If you have misbehaved in the past and have sincere regrets about this, apologize. This whole situation, I think, is one that deserves attention, one that deserves conversation. When we ignore the, I think, very legitimate, and in this case, there are two allegations. So the first was hostile sexual harassment in the workplace, and then the second was sexual assault. There is a very, if we decide to ignore those, I think that we're doing a disservice to a broader discussion about Many experiences that women have had and continue to have in workplaces, men as well. Certainly trans individuals experience a lot of harassment in the workplace, but making sure that we take this seriously. And I think we need to have a larger conversation about what it really means to be accountable. And I used to do research on campus sexual assault and thinking about what it means to hold people accountable and allow them back into our society is a complex problem that we do not have good answers for. But I think in all of this, I'll say at the end of the day, if you know Tara Reid's name and you want to talk about that, and you can't name a single person who's levied a very credible allegation against President Trump, you're not actually interested in violence against women. It's a political weapon that we're using to bash each other. This is a sensitive topic for many people because they've experienced it. And I think we have to get better at talking about it and understanding how we move forward.
You know, from the political middle, and then I'll go to you, Dan, but no better group, in my judgment, to talk about something like this than MWEG, as they're called, Mormon Women for Ethical Government. They were founded by Charlie Mullins Glenn, and I've followed some of their work. They have something called the Little Purple Book. If any of you, I don't know, Shireen or Dan, if you've heard of the Little Purple Book, but I have it on my shelf. It sort of explains their vision and mission, describes their attributes, and tells their story. Dan, your quick take both on the MWEG contribution and if you'd like to make some comments about the Tara Reid allegations in this presidential election year.
Look, I think it's important that we are finally talking about this accusation. Obviously, it took a few months kind of for the Tara Reid allegations to kind of gain legs. It is really unfortunate. This was obviously, I think, something that occurred back in the 90s, if I remember right, it's 93. It's really unfortunate, and it's something I think Shireen has talked about, and it's really educational for me as a male, that it's so hard for women to report these types of things. And so I just think it's super important for society to, you know, to kind of follow the recommendations that Shireen's talked about before. You know, Representative Romero in the Utah House has done a lot, and is honestly, she's done a great job of educating me. Where, you know, it's like this start by believing idea of sexual allegations. It needs to come further, and I think this type of event just highlights that we think we've come a long way, but we really haven't done as much as we could. And so I would say in that standpoint, we could come a long way and improve improve that type of believing. I think second of all, this presidential election is going to be very interesting. And I think it's going to change a little bit because of the Tara Reid allegations. Before, everybody was making this, hey, you know, Joe Biden is cleaner hands. You don't have to worry about him and all these other horrible things that Donald Trump is involved or has been accused of being involved in. You have to worry about it. And so now there's not that high ground really for Senator Biden. And so now it's and former Vice President Biden. Now there's going to be, you know, this different dynamic in the race. And the thing I'm excited about is something Shireen talked about, which is the political weapon nature of it maybe can be put to the side on some of these issues. And maybe we as a country can talk about policy. I know that's probably crazy. It's probably unlikely that campaigns are going to stop, you know, slamming on each other for one reason or another. And we could have an actual policy conversation in the country. But I can wish, right?
Yeah, you can. Hey, jumping from the presidential race to the gubernatorial race here in Utah, we had news that Jan Garbett and Jeff Birmingham have dropped their legal battles to be on the primary ballot. It looks like we're going to have basically Chris Peterson representing the Democratic Party. And then in the primary, we'll have Thomas Wright, Spencer Cox, John Huntsman Jr., and Greg Hughes on the right. Dan, is there any chance that the Birmingham campaign endorses any of these other fine candidates?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that at the moment. Obviously, especially for Jeff and I, the convention loss is really just a week and a half old. And so we're still tender, I guess, a little bit. And definitely Jeff is. And so we're trying to not think about that yet. But
okay. Fair
what
enough.
A great group of candidates, Natalie.
Yeah, yeah. And Shireen, I want to bring you into the conversation if I should have mentioned somebody else on the left other than Chris Peterson. But I think this great law professor at the University of Utah makes a fine candidate. But
yeah,
a lot of eyes are going to be focused, though, on June 30th as these other candidates, make their case. Any predictions, Shireen, from you about what we're going to see over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, what I hope we see over the next few weeks is a really clear demonstration of what the different the people who have stepped up to lead on the right are really going to offer the voters of Utah. I continue to suggest that Utah voters should go back and look at how they voted on things like Medicaid expansion, medical marijuana, better boundaries, not wanting to see a tax on food, all of these different issues that really suggest that our public is much more in the middle in terms of our politics than we are to one extreme or the other. So I don't think Utahns are very far right, even though it's considered a red state. So I would just say it's important for everyone to be looking at what these candidates are actually offering. And I would encourage every single person to give Chris Peterson a strong look. If you're ready to see some change in Utah, if you're tired of business as usual, we actually do have somebody. I think the funniest thing for me is I keep seeing them kind of paint themselves as the political outsiders. And I'm like, not a single one of the lot is a political outsider. So if you're ready for a change of pace and maybe a different perspective to the future of Utah, it's time to look at Chris Peterson.
Yeah. Dan, I'd just love to hear, how do you predict this is going to shake out? I mean, you've got two moderates, I think, in Spencer Cox and John Huntsman, and two more on the right side of the spectrum in Greg Hughes and Thomas Wright. It looks like, you know, the middle and the right are going to be split.
Sure. And that, I think, will produce a very interesting result. You talk about the moderate versus conservative perspective. I'm going to go one further. Well, actually, this race is so interesting. Think about this. The count my vote people are always complaining that the caucus convention process is constantly producing these far right candidates, and yet, you know, we have Spencer Cox who wins the convention. That had to cause some heads to explode, by the way. So that's one component. But then let's think about the other dividing line. You want to talk about conservative versus moderate. I want to talk about the president. So you've got Greg Hughes, who is stumping pretty hard for, you know, I'm the president's type of choice. You have John Huntsman, who served with this president as an ambassador to Russia. And then you have Spencer Cox, who has made probably more strident statements against the president than anybody in the race. And then, from a fourth position, you've got Thomas Wright, who worked at the party level and has always been supportive of the president. And so that doesn't really break down that moderate conservative element. You kind of have Spencer Cox off on an island where he's not perceived as the president's guy. And then you've got the other three who seem to be kind of more in on the president, albeit. You know, I think John is a little, former Governor Huntsman is a little kind of less that way. Just that kind of dynamic with the president up for election is going to be an issue for sure. And then you've got this moderate conservative element. And then, you know, you've got, but let's be honest, one of the four of them is going to be the governor. And I'm actually surprised that I'm saying this, but if I had to pick right now, it's going to be one of those four.
Oh, good heavens. That didn't make any sense. Hey, but just quickly before we go to our gratitude and gripes, air quality. We've had an interesting natural experiment happening in our lovely valley here. As the economy slowed down, the air quality improved. A lot of interesting research that's able to be done at that time. Shireen, you've looked into this. I'd love you to set this up for a real brief conversation.
Yeah, so I believe this is research that came out of the University of Utah. The article appeared in the Salt Lake Tribune this week. It said that as we entered into the slowdown, we saw a traffic drop of 40 to 50%. Along with that came a drop of nitrogen oxide. It was 57% lower. PM 2.5, which is something that a lot of people are concerned about, was also down at about the same level. So about 50, I think the number in the article is 59% lower. And carbon dioxide dropped by 20 to 30%. So thinking about what this has really done to improve, and I just remember going out, especially in those early days for walks, and just we had cooler temps, and you can usually see that haze over the valley, and it was gone. So I hope that this is a really interesting turning point where we can start to think about when and where and why we put people on our roads.
Great point. Hey, we got to go to gripes and gratitude, and we're going to do real short ones. Dan, you get like 5 words.
Okay. I'm just going to say I'm extremely grateful for my family during this time of isolation.
Lovely. Shireen?
Hummingbirds are back. I feed hummingbirds, and I saw my first one just today.
I'm great. I'm going to do Paycheck Protection Program, $5.4 billion that came into the state of Utah, 43,000 companies aided. It's been a good thing for our economy. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner, Shireen Gurbani, and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.